Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
And any questions about the motorcade itself will need to be directed to the United States Secret Service.
I got a question.
Yeah, I got a question.
Jeez.
I have a list of questions.
8:26 p.m.
That's your Eric's hung up on somebody being hammered at 8:30.
My gosh.
On a Monday.
And I'm not justifying any time right, to be doing, but wow, okay.
My question one is, what the actual hell is going on?
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
It's go time.
Oh, yes, sir. It is go time. That's Trent Miner, the president of the Wisconsin County Clerks Association, on Wisconsin's Morning News on Tuesday. Of course, the start of the in-person voting has begun, and there were a lot of people out doing the voting.
One lady said that, you know, it was best to get early voting done right now just to avoid the long lines on November. So it's best to vote now. It's best to vote now. Other people that I talked to said that they were just surprised by how long the lines were, because this is the first time they ever saw lines, you know, go out the building just to vote.
Yeah, that's WTMJ Sean Brenda on the Midday Show on Tuesday. Yes, long lines. And not just in one or two spots, not just in downtown Milwaukee, but some of the other areas. In Waukesha, you saw long lines as well. It was almost as if people thought Tuesday was Election Day.
Or the only day where you had this opportunity
to do the
in-person absentee voting.
He was at the Seidler building.
When I got there around like maybe 10, 10:30, there was already a line that was going to the very back of the building. And by the time I cast my ballot, the line was already going outside down the street towards Kilbourne Avenue.
So the mayor's office, we have a number this morning from the mayor's office in Milwaukee anyway. 4,761 ballots were cast on the first day. I would have guessed even more than that, just given some of the numbers.
But that's
just in the city of Milwaukee.
Right. And the city of Milwaukee has 10 early voting sites. 10 of these opportunities, you know, in most communities, it's city, village, town hall, period.
The confusing thing for us was, why yesterday? Why just on Tuesday did you see these crazy lines? Like, wouldn't if you were the voter saying, you know what, I'm going to early vote today, and drove up and saw a long line, wouldn't you be like,
nope,
you know what, I'll early vote tomorrow.
Like, drive on by.
Right? Like,
why are you replacing one line for another line?
Right. You have multiple days. I mean, who knows? Maybe yesterday was the only day for some folks to be able to do it. I was just surprised to see that many people.
I'm with you on that.
Waiting in line. There were a couple of issues. Glendale, they were using a system that was getting overwhelmed by the number of votes that were being cast.
My clerk tells me that the person at the state said to her, we didn't anticipate this level of volume on the first day of early voting.
Yeah. So the state was like, whoa, what are you guys doing? Why are you all voting today? That's the Glendale mayor there, Brian Kennedy, who says their system is now back up and running, but it did have some moments on Tuesday.
An important tagline, I'll say it over and over again because folks get confused about this. There are different rules for when you can vote in-person absentee.
Correct.
Depending on where you live. So you got to check with your local clerk's office. You can't, if you don't live in Milwaukee, you can't go to one of these Milwaukee sites. You have to vote in your community, and each community has its own rules. There are some boundaries that are set by state law, which is yesterday was the first day legally that it can be offered. The Sunday before Election Day is the last day legally it can be offered, but most communities don't offer weekend hours.
So cast that ballot.
You got to get out and vote.
But you don't have to take it from us, Mr. Baseball.
Get out and vote.
Yes, okay.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk.
Ooh, what's that?
Milwaukee,
oh, here we go.
Milwaukee, Milwaukee. The word around town is we're lighting it up. So who's going to win it?
The ball.
Yes.
I was waiting for it. I thought we were doing sports here. What is happening?
The regular season begins tonight for your Milwaukee Bucks. They're in Philadelphia against the Sixers.
The Bucks are expected to begin the season without Chris Middleton, who continues to recover from off-season ankle surgeries.
I'm really not concerned. I mean, it's a long season.
Doc Rivers Bucks, among the oldest teams in the league, with four of their preferred five starters in their 30s, playing against a team vying for Eastern Conference supremacy.
You know, it's funny. I've never thought anywhere was that hostile. Like, yeah, the better the environment, I've always thought the better for the both teams. I think it's a good thing.
Greg Mancic, WTMJ News.
So it's exciting to see the season getting going. Oh, hey, what do you know? The music just can't stop. Anyway, so it's tonight, 6 o'clock start time. 6:30 is the tip-off right here on WTMJ.
If you're up with us normally at this time, you're an early riser, so I like that East Coast tip time. Let's do it at 6:30. Get the whole game in here before bedtime.
Absolutely. Yes, tonight on WTMJ, we do have some other NBA news to share with you. There was history made, a never-have-happened-before moment taking place in Los Angeles.
History tonight, the first father-son duo to play together in an NBA game.
That's how it sounded on TNT. LeBron James.
And what a celebration for the James family.
Yep, James and his son Bronny entering the game late in the second quarter. The only time in history a father-son have ever been on the court at the same time playing an NBA game. The Lakers would go on to win. LeBron said to have taken Bronny to Culver's after the game.
Hey, son, you want to get an ice cream? Want a custard?
Hey, nice job tonight.
A little custard? No, get some cheese curds?
No Culver's.
Nice game there, son.
The Griffies were there on hand, which is kind of cool.
Did Bronny do anything?
No.
No.
They won the game, though.
Right. Okay. So that's a stunt.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You're using a roster spot on a stunt.
Actually, and there was even a line in one of the stories about it saying, for the first and who knows, maybe only time.
Right. He's going to go play for their equivalent of the Herd after this.
Probably.
Impossible. Another shocking how could this happen moment involving the U.S. Secret Service and the safety of the dignitary whose life is in the hands of those agents, and in this case, her detail. A near miss that we're just learning about from Vice President Kamala Harris' motorcade on a Milwaukee freeway. At the start, I will note, this is different than the assassination attempts on former President Trump, because this one was not that. There's no indication that this was an intentional act or anything meant to disrupt the vice president or her motorcade. But it could have been. And even if it weren't, the result still could have been disastrous. Monday of this week, when the vice president was in town, where was her event? Brookfield, right?
Brookfield, yep.
Okay, Monday so she's night. Out in Brookfield in the early evening, and then the motorcade is making its way back to the airport in Milwaukee. A Milwaukee drunk was able to get within feet of her traveling vehicle on the freeway as he was driving the wrong way on I-94. Impossible. Like, unthinkable, but for the last several months of what we've actually seen with our own eyes. So, the freeway, we're talking eastbound lanes here, so you're headed toward the lake as you approach the Marquette Interchange. It's closed to traffic in those eastbound lanes, as the motorcade typically is for the vice president, okay? And it's all closed off, and so you have the vice president's vehicle, the other support vehicles, and then a large sort of halo of emergency vehicles. Police squads, sheriff's department, I think, was the escort there, sort of guarding the motorcade. And this is approaching the Marquette Interchange, headed eastbound. Because in video obtained by, leave WISN 12 was first to report, you can see it plain as day. There's one car that's not supposed to be there. The driver going westbound in the eastbound lanes of I-94 drives right past the motorcade. Statement from the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office. At about 8:26 p.m. Monday, October 21st, an SUV operated by a 55-year-old man was observed traveling westbound in the eastbound lanes of I-94 at the Marquette Interchange approaching the motorcade. As it drew closer, Milwaukee County Sheriff's deputy stopped the SUV, observed an open intoxicant in the vehicle, suspected the driver was impaired, conducted field sobriety tests, and took other investigative measures, and ultimately took the driver into custody. Recommended charges of operating while intoxicated and recklessly endangering safety. Nobody was injured in the incident. And any questions about the motorcade itself will need to be directed to the United States Secret Service.
I got a question.
Yeah, I got a question.
Jeez.
I have a list of questions.
8:26 p.m.
That's your Eric's hung up on somebody being hammered at 8:30.
My gosh.
On a Monday. Well,
and I'm not justifying any time right, to be doing, but wow. Okay.
My question one is, what the actual hell is going on? Seriously, question one, how is it possible that someone got onto the freeway to be in position at all to even approach the motorcade?
Well, would you be blocking those on-ramps?
Did you not
off-ramps, right. Technically.
Did you not think to you're blocking the on-ramps so nobody can get on. Did you think you had to also block the off-ramps in case someone would approach it from the other direction? Question two, how was this person not stopped by the bevy of law enforcement escorts ahead of the vice president's vehicle? Here comes someone driving at the motorcade.
What are you doing there? I mean, it's not like those motorcyclists or those cars have spike strips they can just toss right out of the vehicle.
I suppose, but don't you drive, and I don't know the rules of engagement, but what are you there for if not to stop an approaching vehicle at the motorcade?
Yeah.
They're lucky they didn't, like, open fire.
Exactly, Deb, right? How was there not intervention prior to that wrong-way driver actually getting that close? Question three, isn't this supposed to be hard to do? Like, again, one would think, and there have been, you know, how many Hollywood movies about assassination attempts, right?
Right.
Some dignitary or a president. You're talking about a feature-length film, 2 hours long, right? You get into the plot, the drive, what is behind the motivation, the how do I acquire the weapons, the surveillance, the weeks of watching, the movements to figure everything out, right?
And even also the suspension of reality in most,
yes,
if not
right.
all of those movies.
Wow, that would never happen, right? Instead, here you got a Milwaukee drunk who wanders in and is allowed to get that close. CNN did obtain a statement from the Secret Service. Spokesperson Joe Biesk said the agency is aware of the incident involving a motorist traveling in the opposite direction. Well, that's good. Well, yeah, we're aware this happened. We are grateful to the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office for its response, which allowed them to stop the motorist and take the driver into custody for DUI, the statement said. How many more wake-up calls do we need before this race in the course of American history is tragically altered? Coming up, father and son tip off the NBA season, and the Bucks open on the road tonight. Sports at 6:45.
You still hit the Denny's from time to time?
It's been a minute.
Was that one of the places, the go-tos?
Man, I don't know if it was new at the time, or, but I remember after church on a Sunday.
Really?
An old Joe Vitrano would say, all right, going to Denny's.
Let's go hit it.
Right, just north of Highway 100 there in Wauwatosa on North Avenue.
Oh, the popular
special.
The diner chain struggling at the moment. It's going to shut down some restaurants.
Denny's is closing 150 of its restaurants. 50 locations will shut down by the end of the year, followed by 100 more next year. It's also considering cutting hours so it would no longer be open 24/7.
Ah, that's the best part. Going late at night. Back in the day, so there are, across the country, there are 1,300 locations, and in Wisconsin, the Denny's website says there are 23 Denny's still in the Badger State. As of now, don't know if any or which ones of those will shut down.
I feel like there's been increased competition, certainly over the years, right? Not just on a local level where you have more sort of really nice, higher-end mom and pops, right, that are a step above your traditional diner.
Back in the high school days, Baker Square was another one of the ones we'd run to.
But I don't think they were a 24/7,
no,
right?
No.
So Denny's had the late night and overnight crowd.
Did you mention Perkins already?
Perkins, yeah. IHOP growing in popularity.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, boy. Good times.
A little moons over Miami. Come on. 6:38 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Hey, coming up, an E. coli outbreak tied to fast food. We do have a case of illness here in Wisconsin. We'll get you that information next. .642 now, Wisconsin among at least 11 states where the CDC is confirming cases tied to an E. coli outbreak with McDonald's, believed to be the source of a potentially deadly infection. In fact, one person among the 49 known cases has died. ABC's Brian Clark.
The menu item, quarter pounder hamburgers, specifically their slivered onions and beef patties. McDonald's says food safety is its top priority and that it's working with the CDC and federal regulators and that it's removed quarter pounders from menus in Colorado, Kansas, Utah, and Wyoming, as well as in parts of 8 other states. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Now, only the one case right now reported here in Wisconsin, most in Colorado and Nebraska. What is E. coli? E. coli, and we have these outbreaks from time to time, and we get reschooled in it.
We have a history of this, don't we?
We do, yes. E. coli, naturally occurring bacteria in animal intestines. Problem is, it can, during the meat processing, end up on the food that we eat. It's why we cook the food. If beef, like even if it has E. coli present, is cooked to the proper temperature, the E. coli is killed off. If it's not and you ingest it, E. coli poisoning can make you super sick, even kill you.
E. coli is a bacteria that can cause serious illness, including fever, stomach cramps, and in severe cases, can be deadly. All of the people who got sick reported eating at McDonald's beforehand. Most reporting they ate a quarter pounder hamburger. McDonald's removing the sandwich from the menu in affected areas, saying in a statement, a subset of illnesses may be linked to slivered onions used in the quarter pounder and sourced by a single supplier that serves three distribution centers.
That's ABC's Ariel Reshef there. Now, I thought you said beef. McDonald's is saying onions. So cross-contamination also can be an issue. It's usually more localized. So if you remember the E. coli outbreak tied to Sizzler restaurants here in Milwaukee and the one in Tulsa.
Right.
This was back in the year 2000. I covered this story extensively. We had 150 people who got sick. A three-year-old little girl died. And I remember covering that story. And in that case, they found that it was cross-contamination. So someone had used, at least in one case, the Sizzler there on Layton Avenue, someone had used the same knife to cut beef that had E. coli present. And then the knife was not properly cleaned, used the knife to cut up fruit for the buffet. And so the bacteria was present on the watermelon specifically in that case, and people got sick that way. The most serious case is a person develops HUS, which is hemolytic uremic syndrome. Basically, it causes kidney failure, causes your organs to start shutting down. Even many who survive a serious infection have long-term health effects. And a lot of folks just get sick, and it ultimately passes their system without any medication. No more specific information really on the Wisconsin case here, where it was or whether there are any limits on quarter pounder sales in the state. We had the one report earlier that said there were not. So this is not a big thing in Wisconsin right now, but sometimes more information comes in. More people have said, oh yeah, I was sick. They learn about it through these reports and then later report to their local health department.
Boy, McDonald's in the news a lot this week. You got the former president handing out fries and
handing out E. coli burgers. Well, not a good look for the campaign, right?
McDonald's was saying in that case, hey, look, we're not endorsing a candidate. Right. We're not. And then a couple days later, you got this.
Two ways you don't want to be in the news. 6:45, sports up next. The Bucks start their season tonight.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk.
Let him finish.
I'm sorry.
Milwaukee Bucks, green and growing.
See, the thing, we're not growing. We're already there. The window is open. Expectations are high for the Milwaukee Bucks, who begin their regular season tonight in Philadelphia against the Sixers.
Bucks head coach Doc Rivers is preaching continuity for a team that returned 10 players from last year's squad.
All the guys spent a lot of time together and just working out together all in L.A., and that connection has been huge. You can feel the difference.
Rivers admits continuity was lacking for the Bucks last season following the arrival of Damian Lillard.
My guess is Dame thought he was going somewhere else, and 2 days later he was in Milwaukee, was not in great shape. And then the injury thing, Chris was injured a lot, Giannis in and out. They just had no time to connect.
Greg Mancic, WTMJ News.
So the home portion of the schedule begins Friday night against the Bulls. The game tonight's tip-off is 6:30. Of course, we have coverage beginning at 6 o'clock right here on WTMJ. We do have some other NBA news. There were some games Tuesday night on the hardwood, and this has never happened before.
History tonight. The first father-son duo to play together in an NBA game.
LeBron James and his son Bronny entering the game late in the second quarter. That was on TNT. The only time in history this has ever been done before. I'm trying to think of it. I played some beach football against my kids this past year. Felt that for about 3 days afterwards.
Yeah, that's not
quite the same.
You seem to be in reasonably good shape. But
trying to think if there's anything else that you've ever done with your kid or with your father that would even come close to a comp. What unique thing successfully have you done?
Are you asking me?
Well, sure.
Man, I remember when I first started in media, I took my dad, I did a radio show in Green Bay with this guy, John Mino, and he and I took a bus trip to Wrigley Field, like, hey, okay, join Mino and the Vin Man. When I took my dad, we picked him up at the Juicy Lucy on Highway 20 there in Racine on our way down, and he got to see, like, okay, this was his first opportunity to see his son as a, I was going to say professional, but that show was hardly that, but he got the full experience.
I'll have to think about that. I'm trying to think of what... I mean, I've taken my dad to the circus. Does that count?
I don't think so. So you would think, if there is a city on Earth where a professional sports team is proposing a long-term lease deal with its stadium and proposing to make $1.5 billion in improvements to said stadium without taxpayer funding from the state, county, or city in which it resides. If I asked you, in what major sports town, Eric, on Earth, is that a slam dunk? 5-minute meeting, where do I sign, done deal. It is what city?
Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Green Bay, Wisconsin. And if you thought that, you'd be wrong. And yep. It's because you don't know Green Bay politics. I do, because I live there. 4 years in college, a little over 4 years working in my first job at WFRV-TV, Channel 5 Eyewitness News.
Go. Well done.
My brother still lives up there. More on that local perspective, if you will, in a moment. But let me frame the debate for you. The Packers are seeking a long-term lease at Lambeau Field, and there's movement on that today. After what they say are years of frustration in dealing with the city of Green Bay, the city has an ownership stake in the stadium. The Packers have gone public, which is sort of a rarity for Green Bay. They keep a lot of things in-house at 1265 Lombardi Avenue. Mm-hmm. But they're out. They're blowing up the mayor by name. The mayor is proudly holding things up. He's not hiding from it. He said, yeah, I'm not doing this. Okay. Today, the Green Bay City Council is set to get publicly involved as well. Council members are planning a news conference this afternoon to lay out their side of the story. And I'm not sure if their side of the story is different from the mayor. Council's elected independently from a mayor, so they may have a different take than the mayor himself. At issue here is the Packers have a hard deal with the city and then a separate entity, the Green Bay Brown County Professional Football Stadium District. Much like what we have here with American Family.
Okay, sure.
Similar, but not the same.
Yeah.
That hard deal is through 2032. The team then, after that, has a series of two-year renewal options under the current terms of the lease. After that, it's essentially, though, a hard deal for another 8 years, if you will. Packers want a new deal. Right now, they pay rent. It's a little over $1 million a year, and that rent goes up 2.75% annually. So every year, they pay 2.75% more in rent. Packers want to start over. They want a whole new deal. And the terms, as they've stated, they want a rent freeze. So no more of the annual increases. But in exchange, they say, we'll take over everything. We will no longer count on the football district, whatever, which was funded initially by a half-cent sales tax up in Green Bay years ago when they did the original Lambeau Field renovation. We won't tap into that. We won't ask the city for any money. We'll take care of everything ourselves. And that looks like $1.5 billion or so that we want to spend over the next 20 or 30 years improving Lambeau Field. They say in exchange for that, we'd like a rent freeze. And we'll keep paying our part, but we don't want that to go up every year. And right now the mayor's saying, no deal, not interested in that.
Is the mayor afraid that that rent money could actually be more beneficial than everything else the Packers are willing to pay and not tap into?
Sure. In the friendliest of terms, you have a mayor who is responsible to his taxpayers and is saying, like, wait, you want me to knock off what would be an annual increase at the end of which at least is, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
What happens to that sales tax money if the Packers aren't dipping into it? Does anyone get that?
It's going to expire. The sales tax already sunsetted, money will be out.
So Green Bay would be giving up some money.
So, yes.
The city would be losing money. Right.
But you wonder, like, how is this not a done deal? I referenced that before. Like, it's Green Bay and you watch the games on Sunday and you got the national media talking about the love affair of these fans. Absolute. They own the team, the shareholders.
They adore the team.
It's Green Bay. It's not all good in Green Bay. What I know about Green Bay fans and city of Green Bay surrounding communities, Schwabenon, Alloway, De Pere. Sure. How should I keep naming communities?
Please.
Bellevue. Howard, Hobart, Suamico, Little Suamico. Anyway, those fans, they love football, and they love the team. They love their Sunday afternoon game. Many have separate feelings about the corporate entity that is the Green Bay Packers.
So they don't like the man, but they like the team.
And some feel that the Packers wave their big stick around and shove people around and do sort of what they want, and they have a resentment about that.
Interesting. Okay.
And the other thing is, there are many who believe, like, we don't really need the Packers. Green Bay is a lovely community.
Are you sure?
You all say that Green Bay wouldn't exist if it were not for the Packers. That's not true. We have the Bay. We have fishing. We have a nice museum. We have all these things. And there is that element there. Right or wrong, there's that belief and that feeling. So the reason it's not a slam dunk is because that percolates there in the politics of Green Bay and how the corporate entity that is the Packers is received.
So tonight's the big night. Is it an evening meeting?
It's a news conference. There is no meeting. That's
okay,
the problem.
You're right.
The Packers are out saying, where's our meeting? And they're accusing the mayor even of last-minute canceling meetings, playing little games. So I don't really have – I don't know where I come down on all of it. We'll see what the council says tonight. And I've got – we're going to hear from the Green Bay Packers, and we're going to hear from the mayor himself coming up just after 8 o'clock this morning as we get more into it. But that is afoot today in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Go away, baby. Don't please stay. Okay, they're not leaving.